it's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. But I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have, years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Well, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
This land is yours. You must protect it. It won't be yours long if you don't protect it. If necessary, with your lives and your children with their lives. Don't discount your enemies. They will be back. And if your house is burned, build it again. If your corn is destroyed, replant. If your children die, bear more. If they drive you out of the valley, live on the sides of the mountain, but live. You will always look for leaders, strong men without faults. There aren't any. There are only men like yourselves. They change. They desert. They die. There are no leaders but yourselves. That strong people is the only lasting strength.
The only lasting strength, but I'm afraid too many white people today and always have been superficial. They get all excited and jump up and down and go to a Trump rally and punch some guy in the nose, and that's the end of their fight. That's the end of their war. Trying to get them to do anything else is a complete waste of time. In fact, most white people, in fact, almost all white people want to be led by the nose or kicked in the ass. They don't want to come up with any ideas themselves. They don't want to do anything on their own. That's why you see white guys always run around with buddies. Let's go to the football. Let's go to the nigger ball game, two or three guys. Let's go to the bar, two or three guys. Not too many individualist white men around anymore. They've got to have somebody holding their hand to do anything. Any pro-white activity's got to be at least two guys with a case of beer before they get started. And this is Terrible Tommy back in the bunker right here below the rich soil of north central Indiana. Beautiful day today. The sun, we had a lot of fog this morning, but the sun came out and it is beautiful. I had my menagerie of creatures out here at the feeding trough. All the birds were out there feeding, and we had our friendly squirrel out there feeding. And this morning we had a newcomer to the group. We had a big old rabbit. So we're collecting a veritable zoo out here next to my house. We are at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations. And your donations for this month are due. And that's where you send any extra donations you'd like to go to the POWs. And then go up to resist.com to get a thorough education. How about that? Well, let's go back to the pessimist's guide to history. We haven't been there for a few days. I miss it. I like to read about these stories of pessimism. About history and how terrible things have gone in the past to make you feel better. If I didn't do this once in a while, you'd feel terrible because you'd think every little thing that's going on is a terrible thing, is going to wreck your life. 1837, Mississippi steamboat collision. On October 31st, the side-wheeler steamer Monmouth collided with the Tremont on the Mississippi River near Prophet Island. 300 people were killed in the accident. Fulton's invention gave us a new method of navigation, both romantic and, at least here, dangerous. People used to get tossed off those steamboats, too, for not paying their gambling debts. David Duke's lucky he didn't get tossed overboard. 1840, Natchez tornado. About 2 o'clock p.m. on May the 7th, a fierce wind came up from the southwest as a dark cloud approached the riverfront town of Natchez, Mississippi. Another cloud formation moved from the opposite direction, and the collision of the two fronts at Natchez apparently unleashed both a tornado and a torrential rain, which amounted to 9 inches before the storm ended. Well, hell, they've gotten more than that just lately. Tornado winds ripped through Natchez, peeled off roofs, and crushed whole buildings. The air became a whirling mass of shingles, bricks, timbers, and even heavy ox carts. Scattered debris from wrecked buildings everywhere. I'm sure it threw some people around, too. Meanwhile, out on the Mississippi River, the tornado tore away the superstructure of one steamboat and capsized another with the great loss of life. The Natchez Ferry and 60 other flatboats were also sunk. In all, the tornado killed 317 Confederate people at Natchez, many of them by drowning in the Mississippi. Well, that was 1840. It couldn't have been Confederate. They weren't Confederate since. They were loyal American Federalists. 1841, Erie Steamboat Fire. The steamboat Erie left Buffalo, New York for Chicago on August the 9th with a fresh coat of paint and varnish on the outside. But inside its boiler room, a disaster was waiting to happen. Containers of inflammable turpentine had been stowed there close to the hot boilers. When the turpentine finally exploded, the ship's fresh paint and varnish caught fire immediately, spreading the flames in all directions like traces of gunpowder. The ship's 250-plus passengers desperately tried to escape as a fire engulfed the steamboat. Well, over 100 immigrant passengers crowding the ship's steerage section were probably trapped there and burned alive. Lifeboats were swamped as other now hysterical passengers on deck overloaded them. Some of these people were drawn into the still-burning paddle wheels. Others jumped straight into the choppy waters and survived by clinging to pieces of floating debris until help arrived. By then, however, the disaster had killed 240 people. 1841, hurricane wipes out St. Joe, Florida. I've been to Florida, lived in Florida, but I don't know where that's at. A hurricane annihilated St. Joe near modern Apalachicola. Oh, I see. In September, leveling all the buildings and killing 4,000 people. St. Joe is no longer on the map. That's why I didn't know about it. 1842, train crash near Versailles, France. On May 8th, a train filled with dignitaries who had attended the king's fete at Versailles, was returning to Paris when an axle broke on the locomotive. The engine and the passenger carriages overturned and the wooden passenger cars quickly caught fire. Over 50 people were killed in the wreck, many of them burned alive in the car carriages. And you think you have it tough. You ain't seen nothing. 1842, a tornado again ravages Natchez, poor old Natchez. For the second time in 2 years, Natchez, Mississippi, was hit by a deadly tornado. The twister killed some 500 people when it landed on June 16th, but property damage was much less than the disaster of 1840. You know, I don't think I'd want to live in Natchez, because I think that shit could happen about any time. 1845 to 1848, the Irish potato famine. Nearly half of Ireland's 8 million people were small-tenant farmers who depended on the potato crop for their food. A one-acre plot of potatoes was enough to feed a family of four. Grain and other crops had to be exported to pay the rent on the farm to the English overlords. But in 1845, a strange new blight caused the potatoes to rot in the ground. 4 years of terrible famine had begun. Millions went hungry as the blight devastated the 1845 crop. But I'll bet you those landlords didn't let up on collecting the rents. In 1846, hopes for a good harvest that would save the people suddenly ended when the plants blackened and withered to the ground overnight. "It's the devil! It's the devil! You guys didn't worship the baby Jesus enough!" The smell of rotting potatoes spread despair throughout Ireland. Women sobbed in the fields as they realized another year of hunger lay before them. They didn't have aid, you know. I don't think Britain gave much aid. With the spring harvest completely destroyed, the poor farmers were left with nothing to eat. Millions wasted away from hunger and disease. To make matters worse, the winter of 1846 and 47 turned out to be brutally cold. Gaunt, starving women wandered through the streets begging for food. Families with nothing else to eat gnawed on weeds. Landlords evicted thousands of starving families who could not afford to pay their rent. This was the brutality of white people against white people. Our race has always been good at that, killing each other. In Skibbereen, one witness described looking into a hovel where six famished and ghastly skeletons, to all appearances were dead, were huddled in a corner on some filthy straw, their soul covering what seems a wagged horse cloth, their wretched legs hanging about, naked above the knees. I approached in horror and found by a low moaning they were alive, unquote. Where was that churches? Where were the churches of Europe during this time? Where was the churches of England during this time? They're such hypocrites. The Christian churches are such goddamn hypocrites. The nation was so ravaged by, well, you know, because most of England was Protestant, I guess, by that time, and these were Catholics. We cannot possibly feed a white Catholic. The nation was so ravaged by hunger and disease and cold that only about one-eighth of the usual crop was sown in 1847. The harvest of 1848 again was disastrous. Weakened by starvation, the people succumbed to epidemics of cholera and typhus. One witness described Ireland as one mass famine, disease, and death. Emaciated women wandered through the streets carrying corpses of children in their arms, begging for money to buy a coffin. Help from the British government was slow in coming, and what arrived was not nearly enough, as usual. Rather than subsidize food supplies for the starving, the government enacted a scheme to put the hungry to work building roads and canals. Can you believe it? But the pay was too little. Food prices were generally high because of bad harvest throughout Europe. Meanwhile, exports of grain continued throughout the crisis. The peasants needed the sale of grain to pay their rents. Scattered rebellions broke out across Ireland. Some looted corn storage bins or broke into bakeries. A few of the starvings got themselves arrested so that they could be fed in jail. All who could afford passage left Ireland for Canada or the United States. But the squalid conditions aboard the emigre ships killed thousands en route. Gee, I keep hearing about niggers all the time. I never heard about thousands of Irish immigrants dying on boats in the United States. Maybe all those fucking white-hating, self-hating whites should look into this sometime. Altogether, 1.5 million people fled Ireland during the famine. By the time the potato harvest recovered in 1849, Ireland had lost more than a quarter of its population to immigration or death. An estimated 1.5 million people had died from starvation, exposure following eviction for not paying their rents, or disease caused by the famine. Another example of man's inhumanity to man in the face of profound tragedy, or I say, white man's inhumanity to white man. And then you wonder why there was an Irish rebellion? Come on. Come on. Yeah. And you wonder which side? No wonder which side I'm on? I'm on the white side. In any situation, I'm on the white side. What's sad about that, all those millions of Irish, when they got to this country, retreated like shit in this country. And they were in low-paying jobs, and living in shacks and hovel. And guess what? Along came the Civil War, and the federal government brought them in by the thousands into the Union Army. Because they would give them citizenship and they'd have a little money coming in from a payday from the Union Army. You can't win with these bastards. At least you can't win the way most people play with these bastards. I do think it was largely Irish who rose up in New York and had the riots and killed hundreds and maybe thousands of blacks because they didn't want to go into the goddamn war against the South. Well, I see State Senator Matt McCoy of Iowa. He says here, I led debate on the Iowa Senate vote to expand Iowa's hate crime laws to include everybody but white heterosexual males. He says some of the most vulnerable Iowans. Iowa's hate crime statute currently covers Iowans based on race. No, not most of the white race. Skin color, not white skin color, religion, not atheist, ancestry, no, national origin, political affiliation, age, disability, and nationality. The list gets longer all the time. It's totally insane. A Senate file approved on a bipartisan vote and currently in the Iowa House as gender identity and gender expression to Iowa's hate crime laws. In other words, if you disagree with the homosexual propaganda and transsexual or whatever, that's a hate crime. Man, with this charge, a crime against a person because of their gender, well, it's the key word is crime. What do you say a crime is? Identity or gender expression can be prosecuted as a hate crime. Well, transgender Iowans are 4 times more likely to be assaulted because they are different. Well, I have never, I don't know what to tell you about this stuff. Just asking you, when's the first time you ever heard of this transgender thing? It's only been the last few years at most. All of a sudden, it's everywhere. There are transgender people everywhere. There's homosexuals on every corner. It's a, wait a minute. There's something screwy here. It's not biologically or physically possible or mentally possible for that many people that fast to have changed their whole idea on life and nature. There's something rotten in Denmark here. Something that's been induced to a lot of people, and they bought into it. I think, actually, a whole lot of homosexuals are not even homosexuals. I just think they're playing out as an act because people have become so bizarre. But transgender, you know, white guy going home from work gets waylaid and they beat the shit out of him. He's not a homosexual. Does he get any support or protection? No, that's a simple assault. That's just simple assault. When you gonna rise up, white man? Kick ass and take names. Especially the politicians that are passing this shit. Why not invade their state houses and let them know how you feel? But you won't do it. I know you won't do it. You never do what you should do. Well, surprise, surprise, despite police receiving a number of complaints from individuals who have been attacked because they are native white Swedish, it has been claimed there have been no convictions for so-called hate crimes against white Swedes at all. Ignorance of the law, even among the law enforcement community, has led to an erroneous impression that legislation surrounding hate crimes only defends those belonging to minorities, according to claims by a Swedish police trainer. Of course, they're designed that way. They're anti-white. They're anti-white working men, for sure. Criminal lawyer Suzanne Gostinas, who also works training police officers in legal matters in ethnic melting pot Swedish city of Malmo, garbage can Malmo, has been recording statistics on so-called hate crimes since 2013 and is unable to present any convincing evidence otherwise. Well, isn't that surprising? In her collation of reports on hate crimes, Ms. Gosgenius found just 1% of reports of hate crimes in her city are made against those identified as white heterosexual Swedish. Yet when the Helsingborg Dagblad newspaper contacted the city prosecutors, police, and government statisticians, they could reportedly produce no major examples of such cases resulting in a successful prosecution. Well, I'm just shocked. I'm shocked out of my jockey shorts. Criminal lawyer Gossinius thinks this is partly because white Swedes are less likely to come forward, so there is an element of underreporting, and that ignorance among police officers themselves means they wouldn't recognize hate crimes against white Swedes, so wouldn't record them properly. This is all bullshit. Cops are trying to keep their ass out of harm's way. She is therefore working to put out a memo to officers in the city to clarify what exactly constitutes a hate crime and to express they can be visited upon the majority as well as the minorities. Well, the majority is not going to be majority very long at the present rate of immigration or invasion. One such case, which failed in prosecution, was over an offensive blog post which claims Swedish people are instinctively uncivilized, barbarous, and all potential sex offenders, calling them filthy vermin. Considering these facts, it contended it would be only fair if all Swedes went extinct, which they probably will, vanished from the face of the earth. The court ruled this was not hate speech because, as a majority group in Sweden, native Swedes should have a higher threshold before they should feel offended. One of the prosecutors interviewed said because Sweden has become a more multicultural society, it was possible there could be situations where a native white Swede could be a victim of hate crime, but she did not think it has been tried yet, and was difficult to say what would be required to gain prosecution as there is no case law to be drawn from. In other words, hate crime laws, you know it, I know it, let's face it, they're anti-white, especially anti-white heterosexual, and more likely to be anti-white heterosexual male in prosecution. But you white guys just sit on your ass and let it happen, and then you cry about it. You're not doing anything about it. Can't help people like that. You're just going to have to grin and bear it and get it. Yeah. grin and bear and get it because you deserve it. You deserve every goddamn thing that's happening to you. One serious criminal case in Sweden is that of a double murder. That's murder. In an IKEA store by an Eritrean nigger asylum invader in August last year. Abraham Uka went right from the asylum office to the homeware shop in Västerås, intending to kill Swedish citizens in revenge for having had his asylum application rejected. But because he killed, his act was not officially recognized as a hate crime. Convicted on two counts of first-degree murder, the attack was seen instead tried as a non-political act. That's how absurd it's getting. I guess you white people deserve whatever happens to you. Here's a little bit more audio from the Chicago travesty of shutting down Trump's meeting up there in Chicago.
Supporters. And some of these, as our camera is showing you, you do not see any kind of security anywhere around. Jim Acosta, you're there. When
That's
you
right.
see these, how many of these
yep.
fights are you seeing break out? Are you seeing, and how much security is there?
Well, I want to say there was a decent amount of police officers here earlier on and private security people here earlier on. They were in a number that was able to keep the peace when it comes to a few protests here and there. There is not enough people in terms of security posture that can handle what we're seeing right now. You can see behind me, there are literally hundreds of protesters behind me. They're obviously very excited because this rally was just canceled here. But at the same time, as David was just saying, as you guys were just talking about, these rallies have been building up to this point. You know, we have seen rallies erupt into chaos on a very small scale, but we've not seen anything like this. And what I'm seeing over my shoulder right now is literally, now you see a large contingent of Chicago police officers coming in, coming down that staircase over there. Can you see it? There's a large contingent of Chicago police officers coming down the staircase. They are obviously now coming in sufficient numbers to take care of this situation, or at least we hope so. Because earlier on, there just was not the number of law enforcement and security personnel in here to prevent something like this from happening. Down here, just down here on the floor, I don't know if you can see this, there's some more scuffling going on down here. There's a fight going on down here. Aaron, nobody delights in this. This is a very sad scene that we're seeing. This is supposed to be American democracy in action. Instead, what we're seeing is just total chaos. We are seeing people just going at each other because of what has been happening at these rallies, where you have such a charged atmosphere. The supporters are almost, some of these supporters are almost looking for a fight, and some of the protesters are almost looking for a fight. In small numbers, the police, the security, they can handle something like that, but not like this. There's just too many people here looking to cause trouble, and I think really you could say that it's happening on both sides, Aaron.
Jim just said this is a tragedy because this is supposed to be American democracy. The tragedy is that perhaps this is representing a significant segment of American democracy right now, where hyperpartisan passions have been so inflamed for so long that when you get a candidate who's been demagoguing to a conservative populist base and a liberal populist base turns out front in protest, it is going to be a combustible combination. And that is what we're seeing right now in a city which has a history of violence around politics and conventions in 1968.
Which is an important point, David Gergen.
It is. And this may have, the silver lining may be that this will help to purge, this will force everybody to stop and take a breath and figure out how to proceed. The candidate ought to be able to hold rallies. He may have to ticket his rallies. Other people have done that before.
Mm-hmm.
You come in through tickets. But he has to take responsibility if there's going to be threats of violence. He has to be the spokesperson for saying we must stop this. It happened in Sarah Palin's campaign. There were a lot of racial things about Obama in the 2008 campaign, mm-hmm. and really nasty things. And we thought we were on the edge of violence here. And John McCain came out at his rally and said it's time to treat him with decency.
And Jim Acosta, do you know, they came out and said they were postponing it. Obviously, Donald Trump was a half an hour behind. Do you know, was there any information as to why? Was there a specific threat? Was it just the overall environment? What caused this to happen? I mean, I would imagine he's nearby, if not right near that center right now.
I would think so, Aaron. And no specific information as to why this event was canceled, but you could just tell as we were talking to you at the top of the hour, there was a whole section of protesters here, hundreds of protesters, and honestly, I think I was being conservative in that estimate. Right now, inside this arena, you probably have half protesters, half supporters, and just to give people a sense of where we are, we're at the University of Illinois at Chicago, in near downtown Chicago, basically downtown Chicago. This is a very racially, ethnically, religiously diverse campus. There were announcements in the news media all day long today from Latino civil rights groups, from progressive groups, from Muslim American groups that they were planning on. The other big question, and my friends in the local press here in Chicago, there is a wealth of venues in the Chicago area. You go all the way out to those conservative collar counties outside of Chicago, there are arenas and auditoriums and venues where you could stage a very pro-Trump rally. Donald Trump, for whatever reason, decided to hold a rally almost in the Lion's Den. This is a very progressive city. And here we are seeing another scuffle break out. And just the ingredients that were here, that are present here, just did not make for the right mix in terms of what Donald Trump, you know, wanted to have in terms of a positive rally. There are just too many volatile elements here.
Sorry, Jim. I was just saying, it sounds like what you're saying. I mean, you know, we don't know exact numbers, so I'm going to emphasize people were ballparking an arena that fits up to 10,000 people. You're saying half and half now is your feeling of protesters and supporters. So we're talking about thousands of protesters.
That's right. I believe we are looking at thousands of protesters inside this arena right now. We were told by one of the security officials here there was probably about 8,500 people on hand. But we are seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of protesters in here. Now, gathered below me right now is a group of people who are pro-Trump protesters. They're saying, we want Trump, we want Trump. You know, we ought to show that as well. Obviously, there are lots of Trump supporters here as well. But I have to tell you, Aaron, to position this rally on a campus as ethnically diverse, as religiously diverse as this one, I think this was inviting trouble to some extent because there were so many announcements during the day that there were plans of protest at this rally tonight.
And nobody was
being turned away.
Yeah, and no one was being turned away, which is a significant thing. I suppose in some ways a positive thing that everyone was going to be allowed to come in. That's important to emphasize. But obviously, turning into this situation, we do now have a statement just coming in from the Trump campaign that I want to read as to why this has just happened, that they canceled this event. Mr. Trump just arrived in Chicago. I'm reading it now. And after meeting with law enforcement, has determined that for the safety of all of the tens of thousands of people that have gathered in and around the arena, tonight's rally will be postponed to another date. Thank you very much for your attendance, and please go in peace. This, I think, is crucial and rather game-changing here. You're talking about they said 8,500 people have it, 4,000 protesters in that arena.
10,000 people had signed a petition against him coming. There were 10,000 people out there waiting to stop this. So it's not surprising there was a significant number inside the hall. I think he did the right thing calling it off. You know, it might have gotten much more serious than what we're seeing right now with him in the hall. Having said that...
Well, you just saw someone rush the stage. I mean, something truly horrific could have happened. It seems pretty clear it was the right thing to do to cancel it.
Absolutely, and I doubt they magged everybody. I doubt that they had security procedures in place for all those people to go in.
We don't know the details on the security precautions put in place, but clearly this is a situation that was going to get out of hand, that is getting out of hand, even in the absence of Donald Trump. And a statement that go in peace is better than nothing, but still too little too late, because we are watching you reap what you sow. And if you run a campaign based on division and demagoguery and dividing American us against them, and then you try to hold a rally on a political campus, on a campus in the heart of Chicago, that, you know, you are going to get these kinds of outbursts. These don't happen at John Kasich rallies. They don't happen at Martin Luther rallies.
No.
They happen at Donald Trump rallies for a reason.
And they don't happen at Ted Cruz rallies either. I want to bring in Neil Bush. Neil and I were going to be talking on the show about a lot of other things, but Neil is with me, and I appreciate your coming on, Neil. Brother to George W. Bush, and Jeb Bush has endorsed Ted Cruz joined his national finance team. So, Neil, let me just ask you, what's your impression of what we're seeing here? A stadium of 10,000, 8,500 people called off due to security concerns. 4,000 plus, our reporter is saying, protesters, people breaking out and fighting all around this arena. What's your reaction, Neil?
It's shocking to me, Aaron, and I appreciate your having me on, and I'm surprised that the conversation turns to this horrific scene. It kind of reminds me of the Democrat convention during the Vietnam War when people were out protesting. Chicago, I guess, has a history of that kind of thing. But, you know, look, Donald Trump has used tactics that have raised an army of very ardent fans, for sure, but he's also locked in a lot of people that just don't like him. And I'm not saying the people protesting there in Chicago are Republican voters by any means, but there is a growing coalition of anti-establishment, Tea Party, Ted Cruz-type people and establishment folks that are rallying behind the candidacy of Ted Cruz to unify our party before the national convention so that we can have a positive message. We don't need Donald Trump to...
Chaos is good. Chaos is very good. I'd like to see bigger crowds of these intervention. Chase Whitey out to the suburbs. Oh, well, the whites could go out to the suburbs and have a meeting. And don't kid yourself. These creeps would follow them out there. I've been through this many times. And it's funny how the media are totally in the hands of these move on people. They're just an outgrowth of the old John Brown Anti-Klan Committee, the Progressive Labor Party. It's just a renewal of that same crap that we put up with all through the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. White people are going to have to respond. White people can't have a meeting in downtown Chicago? By God, the town should burn down then if you can't. If you can't have a meeting in the areas that you're supporting and you're financing through your taxes, then burn it down. Let MOVE burn it down. The black KKK. Go after it, baby. Somehow I don't think the black KKK is involved. They're taking care of business on their own home turf, in their own neighborhoods. They're taking business there. Well, anyhow, I'm not opposed to this because it needs to come out in the open. And it needs to scare the shit out of white people and make them respond. If they don't respond, well, the hell with them. Run them out of town. You know, this whole idea of hate crimes is going to come back and bite them in the ass. It's going to bite them big time in the ass as time goes on. And I'm for anything that bites them in the ass. By goodness sake, I found another hate crime. Call the cops. Okay, Mel, take it away.
Religious leaders joined local organizations in rallying support for two men who said they were attacked outside a convenience store this weekend in what police are investigating as a possible hate crime. Authorities are reviewing surveillance video of the reported attack, which occurred shortly after 3 a.m. Saturday at the Quick Shop at 4820 East 21st St. That's just northeast of the Wichita State University campus. One of the victims was Kondunkoru Summa, 23, the vice president of WSU Student Government Association and a Muslim. His passenger, the second victim, is a 19-year-old friend and fellow WSU student who has chosen to remain anonymous. He is Hispanic. They were getting gas and snacks at about 3 a.m. Saturday when they noticed a man shouting at someone who had apparently asked him for gas money. When the suspect began using racial slurs against the man who asked him for money, Lieutenant Randy Reynolds said Monday, one of the students attempted to intervene. The attacker then turned his wrath on the two students, stopping his motorcycle in front of Usama's car and approaching Usama's friend, who had gotten out of the car. The suspect called his friend brown trash and told him he had to leave this country, Usama said at a news conference held Monday on the sidewalk next to the Quick Shop where the reported assault occurred. According to Usama's account, his friend responded, "This is my country. Who the hell are you to tell me to leave?" The incident escalated really quick, with the suspect attempting to punch his friend, Usama said. When he attempted to break up the fight, Usama said he was assaulted and knocked down. He called 911, and as he was on the phone, the attacker rode circles around the two students, chanting "Trump, Trump, Trump," and screaming, "We'll make America great again. We'll throw you out of the wall." The suspect then left on his motorcycle. Usama's friend was treated at the scene for a bruise on his lip. Reynolds said the suspect is a white male about 30 years old who is about 6 feet 1 and 200 pounds. He was wearing a black beanie and black jacket. Wichita police have collected surveillance video from the store and are reviewing it, officials said. Juan Wash, a spokesman for Sunflower Community Action, said he has urged police to make the surveillance video public if possible. Mousa El-Bayoumi, chairman of the board of the Kansas chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, called the attack clearly an unprovoked incident of hate that continues a disturbing trend that we have seen recently. El-Bayoumi called on Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump to deplore this attack and any similar instance, making clear he is against it and does not condone it in any way, shape, or form. Violence has erupted around Trump events, especially in the past weeks. At a Trump speech Saturday in Kansas City, MO, police used pepper spray to try to control the crowd of Trump protesters outside the venue where he was giving a speech. A man in North Carolina has been charged with assault for allegedly punching a protester as he was being escorted out of a Trump rally. During the March 5 caucuses in Wichita, racial epithets were reported, but no arrests were made and no violence reported. Usama said he was initially reluctant to go public with the attack, but eventually decided he needed to let people know what happened. He said he has been grateful for the support from the amazing community. In this great nation, we talk about the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, he said. But if we allow this kind of hatred towards each other, then we can't make America great again. Local religious leaders spoke Monday in support of the victims. We all know that words have consequence and actions have consequence and they lead somewhere, said Rabbi Michael Davis of Congregation Emmanuel. Hateful words have consequence. They lead to hateful action. Hateful action leads down a road. The road of racism and bigotry and hatred leads ultimately to lynching and holocausts and bombings and destruction and death. But at the same time, we can be roadblocks. We can stand in the way and stand up for peace and understanding and compassion and unity, and that is our obligation and why we are all here today, to act as roadblocks against hate. Keith Little, pastor at College Hill United Methodist Church, said he wanted to speak up Monday because silence only goes to continue to promote the injustices that we hear. Hatred and bigotry and attacks have no place in Wichita or around the country or even the world, he said. WSU President John Bardo released a statement Monday saying the attack appears to have been a racially motivated incident. Wichita State University stands with the majority of Kansans in condemning all acts of anger and violence motivated by racism and intolerance, Bardo's statement said. Bardo said that any university student, faculty, or staff member who has experienced any act of violence can contact the WSU Counseling and Testing Center for.
Well, Mel was supposed to have done that, been our journalist, but I had to go back to Zira because Mel has disappeared. I wonder if you went in there and claimed that you were beaten up by a Negro or a Mexican or an Islamic guy. I wonder whether they would file a hate crime report. I don't think they would. No, you're different. You're different. Hey, white guy, get to the back of the line, you stupid bastard. Just pay your taxes. They take your job, they take your girl, they take your country, they take everything, and then expect you to not get upset? They're kidding themselves. It's not started yet. It's just getting a little bit of start. You haven't seen anything yet. Wait till the general election. Let's see here. San Jose State hate crime defendant sentenced to 30 days in jail or weekend work. Former San Jose State student sentenced to probation and community service. Three former SJSU students sentenced to probation for battery of a roommate. Wow. Oh, my goodness, some Jews in New York City are upset, and they think they've had a hate crime committed towards them, and they're demonstrating. So here's a little bit of their demonstration.
Responding to reports of a string of anti-Semitic incidents in New York City, hundreds gathered for a rally at Holocaust.
Responding to reports of a string of anti-Semitic incidents in New York City, hundreds gathered for a rally at Holocaust Memorial Park Sunday to call on law enforcement and legislators to take action against those accused of hate crimes. We cannot be silent when we hear that every week, there is another anti-Semitic incident, said Democratic District Leader Ari Kagan, one of the event's organizers. We just cannot discuss it in our kitchens. It's not enough to discuss it over the phone. We have to show public outrage that we will never agree to it. Kagan, along with District Leader Margarita Kagan and the Russian-language radio station Davidson Radio, called for the rally in response to anxiety over a growing climate of fear caused by hateful acts targeting Jewish people. Several cited media reports about inflammatory comments at college campuses, particularly accounts that students at CUNY's Brooklyn College made hateful anti-Zionist and anti-Jewish comments during a faculty council meeting last month. The rally drew more than 200 supporters and several New York politicians, including public advocate Letitia James, Assemblymembers Dov Hikind and Helene Weinstein, and Councilman Haim Deutsch and Mark Trigger having two children who go to CUNY colleges. I understand that every day, I shouldn't have to be worried of what happens there, said Deutsch. Deutsch said he was working with Hikind to introduce legislation that would require CUNY to report any anti-Semitic incidents to law enforcement and prosecutors. Hundreds gathered at the Holocaust Memorial Park on Shore Boulevard Sunday. Photo, Alex Ellefson / Sheepshead Bites. Hundreds gathered at the Holocaust Memorial Park on Shore Boulevard Sunday. Those gathered at the rally also condemned other acts of hate and harassment, including two swastikas, one in an elevator at a building on Avenue W and another found on a parked car on East 19th Street, as well as a stabbing attack in Crown Heights last month, in which police believe the victim may have been targeted because he wore Hasidic garb. According to DNinfo, City Councilman Mark Trigger said he was informed by the NYPD that the hate crimes against Jewish people happen more frequently than attacks on any other group. Anti-Semitic hate crimes are the number one hate crimes committed in New York City, by far, he said. Speakers at the rally called on city officials to be more aggressive in combating anti-Semitism by thoroughly investigating and prosecuting those accused of hate crimes. Every single hate crime should be punished. Every one of them, said Leonid Rosenberg, who as an artillery officer in the Soviet Army was among the forces that conquered Berlin during World War II. We liberated Europe. We did everything possible to defeat the Nazis, and we thought that anti-Semitism will go away. This unfortunately did not happen.
Well, I guess you be right, Mr. Leninoid, or whatever your name is. You are a Russian communist military guy during World War II. Probably drafted. But I saw your picture in the front page of the newspaper. You must have had 50 medals. God, those Soviets used to hand out medals like candy. Oh, jeez. But it's terrible. We got to do something about this anti-Semitism, okay? I'll be back with you tomorrow, one way or the other. I may have to go to for an appointment tomorrow. We'll see. 14-5, and if you don't listen, white boy, you'll have to feel. I'll leave this last song for you, Mr. Jew Boy, there in New York, and may make you feel better. Yeah.
Cheer up, man. You're not on my side. Something's in order, man. I can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on last gristle, that grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Hey. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your life, just anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. Just because you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And always look on the bright.
Sound effect aimed at whoever, listen carefully. As Tommy Edwards used to sing, it's only a matter of time.